Mr. Atkind, Reel 11. Mr. Atkind, you were telling me about when your the striped pyjama suits were given out at Buckenvold after the showering and the shaving, and that they had numbers on them. Were these numbers already on the suits? Did they run in some kind of order?
They were on the suits, and they must have been consecutive, because when we left Buchenwald, they were calling out our numbers, so they must have known what they were. But in the camp, we were dispersed. I didn't go to a good part of the camp, because I went to very big barracks. We were dispersed. I was separated from most of my friends. I don't know how it happened.
What happened immediately you left the building with your pyjama suit on? Immediately I got
the pyjama suit. I also had the, pot for my soup and a spoon. That was the...
equipment.
And a blanket. So I had those items. I don't know, some of the other men managed to go to better places than I did, because some were smaller buildings and some were larger. And I went somehow on my own without my friends to a very large building full of Russian prisoners of war. Majority were the Russian prisoners of war.
You don't remember how you got to that building? I mean, were you allocated?
We were told walk this way and walk that way and go that way, and we were dispersed all over the camp. And Buchenwald is an enormous camp.
Did this upset you, did this worry you, being split up from your friends?
No, it didn't worry me. I found it quite interesting, because suddenly I was not only amongst Jews. Suddenly I looked around and I could see Russian prisoners of war, German prisoners. Later I found Americans, French, you name it, Dutch, Belgian, and so on. And that somehow made me happier. I felt I am not the only one who is suffering, unjustly.
Did they know you were Jewish? Was there anything on your pyjamas that showed you were Jewish?
Not really, no. Not at that time in Buchenwald, no. There were people with all kinds of triangles, which I didn't understand at the time, but now I know that the red triangles were political and the pink triangles were homosexuals and the greens were the criminals and murderers. I could see people with different triangles, but maybe because we arrived at that time after the bombing raids, that things were a bit disorganized, and somehow maybe there was more freedom because of it. I could wander through the camp. There was no work at all. I could walk from all day from one place to another through this vast camp and look and see and talk to other people, try to communicate, because there were so many languages. I remember communicating with I recognized he was Jewish and he was French, and somehow I understood what he was telling me. He told me about the air raid. He was speaking in Yiddish, and although I didn't understand French at all, and few German words, he told me what happened 2 days earlier. He was working outside the camp in one of the assessment barracks when suddenly the sirens went at midday, and thousands of American aeroplanes started to drop bombs, and the SS men ran into the air raid shelter, which was he was cleaning the barracks. That was his job. And he ran as well when the bombs started falling into the air raid shelter. But when the assessmen saw that a Jew was there amongst them, they kicked him out, and he had to run maybe a kilometer or two from the through all those buildings while the bombs were dropping into the camp area, and all the guards were gone. No one was, everyone was in the air raid because it was such an enormous, thousands of aeroplanes must have arrived there. And nothing happened to him. He managed to run into the camp and he was safe. The following day, he was taken with the party, and most of the SS men were killed because the bombs were, everything was destroyed. They took us once to clear the rubble, and I could see vast, enormous areas of buildings completely destroyed by the bombs. And apparently, only a few days earlier, they were all functioning.
So, whilst you were in Buchenwald, there was no work inside or outside of the camp?
There was very little, not for us, there was very little, some of the men were employed in clearing the rubbish, but there was no, it was just a transit camp as far as our group was concerned. We were supposed to be injected in with anti-typhoid injections. I avoided those injections. I had typhoid in the ghetto, and I didn't, those men who were injected at high temperature for a day and were in pain, and I managed to hide myself. There was a cinema in Buchenwald, and anybody could go there. I didn't go, but the men who went there, and there were long queues outside, and they were saying that the D-Day invasion was shown on the in the cinema. There was a constant film, one after the other, showing the D-Day invasion, which took place 2 months earlier.
Was it a large cinema? And how many people?
It was a large building. It was not, it was a shed, a wooden sort of structure, but it was a large cinema. It could have accommodated 500 people at once, or maybe 1,000. I was inside the building later, before they sent us out, so I could see it was a large building with benches, not a very luxuriously fitted, of course.
Did you find it strange that there was a cinema there and they were showing film of the D-Day landings?
Very strange, very strange. And I wandered from one place to the other because I find it extremely interesting, and there was nothing until 6 o'clock when there was the roll call and everyone had to be in place. But all day I was free to wander from place to place.
Was there any other forms of entertainment aside from the cinema?
Yes, there was a brothel for the SS, and some of the kapos apparently now and then, if the Germans liked them, would take them there. And apparently there were girls, women from all over Europe, and this was in another part of the, I could see it from a distance, some of the inmates pointed out to me, that's the place where the brothel is. And from a distance I could see SS men and lots of Alsatian dogs. And I could see once the assessment being pulled by a line of Alsatian dogs. It was almost like you see the sleigh and the being pulled in the snow, but they were on wheels. This was being summer, and they were sort of pulled by maybe 10 Alsatian dogs and sitting. I find that very strange. I saw that from a distance.
In a sort of carriage?
In a sort of carriage, low carriage, and the Alsatians were sort of pulling.
That's how they'd go around the camp?
No, it was outside. I saw it from a distance. A line of Alsatian dogs pulling a carriage, which, like you see, the huskies pulling a sledge in the snow. There was a small crematorium, but it was only for those who who died. It wasn't there were no gas chambers or anything like that, as far as I'm aware.
Did many people die? I mean, was it kept very busy, this crematorium?
Yes. Well, what happened? It was that at the time I was there, it was a transit camp from various camps that came from Poland, would come there for a week or two, got the uniforms and so on, and got the injections, and then were sent out. And anybody who had any grudge against anybody else could then complain to not the camp, not the Germans, but the camp authorities who were the inmates who were there for a long time, mainly the political ones. And then there would be a trial and people would be executed if they did commit some crime in the camp before. And so I witnessed a number of those executions.
You could complain about someone who'd been with you in the
previous
camp?
You could complain that someone was with you in another camp somewhere else and that he did something, gave information to the Germans, as a result of it somebody was hanged or so on, and that person would be put on trial, like a kangaroo trial. Mm. The trial would take place a few minutes and the person would be sentenced, you know, accordingly. And I witnessed a number of these trials and executions.
What was your reaction to them?
Well, I will describe to you what happened. They found out that one of the criminals was an SS man, and the Russians who came while I was there, a group of another camp, transport of Russian prisoners of war arrived, and they recognized that that SS man was now working in the kitchen and he had a green triangle. Because obviously he must have murdered somebody, not a Russian and not a Jew and not a Pole. He might have murdered his wife or his child or somebody. And because of it, he was sent to Buchenwald. Having been sent to Buchenwald, being a German, he got the best job, which was the kitchen. And he was very well off, plenty of food, and was dishing out food. But suddenly a transport comes from Kiev or who knows where, and those Russians recognized him, that he was the German who murdered so many Russians back in the Ukraine or somewhere. I don't know the places or whatever. And they realized that now they can do to him whatever they like, provided they do it surreptitiously. So when the soup, he was the one who was handing out the soup, a cold room, a huge bucket of soup for our camp. They sent one of the Russian soldiers who could speak a little bit of German to complain that the soup that he gave us was only water, there were no potatoes and nothing else, in order that he should entice him to come to our building, to our barracks. And it worked, because the Russian went there and said, you gave us only water, and this is not fair, and we will starve, and so on and so on. And the German became very furious and said, took a bucket, and I said, I gave plenty of potatoes and meat. The soup was very thick, which was true. Not only will I not give you more, I will take away the potatoes I'll find. So the Russians, to make him more irate, said, no, it's only water, absolutely water. You come and have a look. And that's exactly what he wanted. The moment he was in the middle of our building on the barracks, and I was on the top bank looking down, I had sort of a And when he started with the big spoon, you know, looking into the soup, and he was just about to take this, the potatoes out of into his bucket, when one of the Russians hit him over the head, and not very hard, and as he lifted his head, he was surrounded by the Russians, and they were smiling, and he went pale. He realized suddenly he was in danger, and then the Russians told him, remember such and such camp, remember you were hanging so many people, you remember how many of our friends you've killed, now you are being tried. And he shook his head, no, I must go. And so, of course, they blocked his way. They didn't let him go out. And they realized that they have to be very quick, otherwise he'll complain to the SS men. And they found a rope. He told him that for what you have done, you are sentenced to die, to death, and you'll be executed right away. And they tied the rope to the posts supporting the banks, which are sort of 4 inches square, timber posts. They tied the rope to his neck and to this bank. Two of the strong men grabbed his legs and they pulled him horizontally. They hanged him horizontally. Then they took his body and they threw it into the latrine. And there were many corpses in the latrine.
How did you react to seeing this happen?
Well, how can anyone react to it? It's just part of the nightmare that was just going on around you all the time. That was one of the executions.
Did you want him to die? Did you think he deserved?
I didn't, there was no thought. You see, I didn't know anything about him. It was just opening, it was just unfolding before your eyes, you know, and then he was dead a few minutes, and then he was thrown into the toilet. Now, the toilets were maybe 20 or 40 holes on one side and 40 on the other side, and so that 40 or 80 men could use the toilets at one time. A wooden seat with lots of holes, and a big ditch underneath. And there were some corpses thrown into it.
The toilet was just one long wooden structure with just holes all the way along.
Yes.
And a ditch underneath.
Yes.
And they throw the bodies into the ditch.
They threw his body into the excreta, into the... And the other execution that took place was a Pole against the Russians. You see, in the barracks, there were 90% Russians. I found myself in a barracks, in a place like that. There might have been 500 or 600 of us in this one structure. And this Pole, apparently, when the Russians... The story was that the Russians were employed in clearing the rubble after the air raids. And the aeroplanes, I think British aeroplanes, were dropping German marks, which were counterfeit, in order to destroy the German economy. And it was not allowed to pick up the German marks. But because they were so well done, that I don't know exactly, I haven't seen them, but the Russians would pick up the money when the Germans wouldn't see, and for that somehow they managed to obtain food. And this Pole apparently began to tell the Germans which one of the Russians was picking up this counterfeit money. And whenever they found the German marks on anybody, they hanged him. So because of him, many of the Russians were hanged. And when they arrived in Buchenwald again, they realized suddenly that the protection that he used to have was removed, and they could do anything they liked.
Was this because Buchenwald was so big?
Because the Germans didn't care anymore about it. You see, they would use some people, you know, who would give them information in some small camps. But once they arrived in Buchenwald, they couldn't care less about. They didn't want to, and it wasn't possible.
What happened to the Polish?
And they decided they were beating him up. They were throwing him up in the air. After the roll call, four of the strongest Russian men would take him, Rebiata, you know, they sort of say, come on, friends. They would take his hands and his legs and throw him up in the air, maybe 10 feet or higher, and let him drop onto the tarmac 10 times. And after the curfew, after the roll call, he would go back to the bank and sleep. By then he was swollen and he looked terrible. He had bloodshot eyes, bruised, black and blue. And after about 3 days, he already didn't know where he was. He complained to the SS men during the roll call. And the SS men didn't care, just said, take him away. And after the complaint, the Russians killed him and again threw his body into the...
How did they kill him?
Well, I don't know if they strangled him or he was dead. The same, after the appel, within an hour or so, he was dead.
And put his body in the...
Into the latrine.
You've mentioned appel a few times. Can we talk about roll call at Buchenwald? When was it and what
happened? It was at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and you had to stand to attention for an hour or longer, and the Germans were counting everybody.
Everybody in the whole camp?
Everybody in the whole camp. But we were standing, we were maybe 600 or 800 in one part of the camp, because the appel was taking place all over the place. And the man who was in charge, the capo, who was in charge of our shed, of our camp, would report how many have died. And... until the Germans were satisfied, they've counted everybody. Then we were allowed to go.
What if somebody was missing who wasn't accounted for? What would happen then?
At that time, there were bodies in the latrines. I don't know whether the capo reported that some fell into the toilet or whatever. I don't know if they cared so much, because it was impossible to escape. It was in the middle of Germany, surrounded by the watchtowers, and there was another wire, and I don't think anybody escaped from Buchenwald.
You mentioned before accommodation and that you were on the top bunk. Can you describe your barracks to me, please?
Well, it was a three-level barracks. And the shed was a wooden shed with a pitched roof. And there was a corridor in the middle, quite wide one. And you were lying, maybe 12 men on one side by side. You just had enough room to lay down.
So they weren't single bunks? They were...
No. They were sort of a... You were lying
shelf.
With 12 other men. At each level.
How many would be in the barracks?
Ours was quite a big one. There might have been 600, 800, quite a big one. There were some buildings, one of the biggest buildings. Then Lots of Poles began to arrive, and we knew that there was an uprising in Warsaw. It wasn't the Warsaw Ghetto, because that was more than a year earlier. It was the Poles who, the Russians were on the other side of the Vistula, and they stopped, and the Poles began to fight the Germans, and a quarter of a million were massacred. We didn't know the numbers, but thousands of them began to arrive in Buchenwald. And from them, we knew that the Russians were already in Warsaw, virtually. So we knew what was going on all the in all the camps. Then I also saw Americans. That was very strange, because nobody could communicate with them. There was a group of Americans, maybe 30 or 40, and I went to look at them, but I couldn't speak to them. And they were lying, and they were very unhappy. They didn't know how to cope with the situation. And that gave me kind of confidence. I can manage, I can organize more food.
Were
this is not a bad camp. Well, they were not in uniforms, and I don't know, the story that I heard, that they were dropped behind the lines, not in uniform, and because of it, because they were dropped like spies behind the lines, they were taken to Buchenwald. But they seemed completely lost. They might have been commandos, but I felt they don't know what to do, because you had to go somewhere near the kitchen to find a potato or a beetroot. You had to go where the politicals were, because those older Germans, mainly communists, would now and then, if they saw a younger boy, when they had food parcels, they would give me a piece of bread. Then I would go near another enclosure where there were Danish students playing volleyball. They were very well treated, and the story was that they had their own long hair. They didn't shave their heads. And apparently, I don't know, I cannot verify that, but apparently they were university students from very sort of families, well-off families, and they were. The Germans wanted to enroll them to the SS, and they refused. And because of it, they were sent to Buchenwald. But in Buchenwald, they had VIP treatment. They were in a separate enclosure. They had good food and parcels from home. In addition to that, they got very good food there, and they were well treated. And all day, they were playing volleyball. And I found that as I was watching them, they would now and then throw a piece of bread over the fence, or even a piece of chocolate. So I knew that it's useful to circulate and go around and organize something so that you found a bit more food. And I found it very fascinating and very interesting, because I could see the whole of Europe, the whole of the world is here.
What food would you be given?
There were supposed to be 70,000 people at the time in Buchenwald. I cannot verify whether these numbers are correct or not. But it was an enormous camp.
What food would you be given each day?
Soup, one portion, quite substantial soup, and a small piece of bread. Not enough you would be hungry if you didn't find any more food.